Okay, everybody hear me? Well, it's an honor for me to be here. I was here a year or so ago, I think. I can't remember, but I love coming here. I see a lot of people that I know, friends of my mom who's here, and my sisters who's here. But this is an unusual topic. There's no doubt about it. And it may have more application for you who are parents raising your kids. I know some of you are here with grandchildren or who have grandchildren. But I think that this is a very significant issue. It may be the most significant issue that faces our culture. And yet most people would not even acknowledge that. They think a lot of people would say this is a non-issue. But before I start, I want to share with you two things that I've recently read. And I think that it kind of points out just the serious nature of kind of what we're facing in our country. Now, this first came from something I read over the weekend, Chuck Colson's last book called The Final Word. He says, Christianity is becoming more and more unpopular in our culture. He says, primarily as a result of conflicts over sexuality. He says, this is where modern human beings do not want to be in any way restrained. He says, most of the Bible they accept. They just do not like the way it governs sexual passion. The other comes from a book, and this was really eye-opening for me. I had not really thought through this, just how this has really cascaded into our culture and what it's done to our culture. But this was from a book written by Andy Stanley, who is a minister over in Atlanta. And he says that most major social problems in America are caused or fueled by the misuse of our sexuality. He says, think of the consequences of teen pregnancy, addiction to pornography, AIDS and all other sexually transmitted diseases, abortion, the psychological and physical effects associated with rape, sexual abuse, incest, and all other sexual addictions, and then adultery, which often leads to divorce and the breakup of the family. And most significantly, think of the problems of poverty, drug abuse, and violence in the inner city, which can be traced to all the children who are born out of wedlock. And basically, he goes on and says, you can see how out-of-control sexual behavior can have far-reaching, damaging consequences to our society. And then he asks a pretty interesting question. He says, if we could eliminate all of these sex-related social ills from our society, imagine the resources we would have available to apply to the handful of issues that would remain. And so I shared that just to kind of help us all realize that this is something that's very serious in our culture, and I'm not sure that we are paying much attention to it. But as you'll see, it really has implications for our children, for our teenagers, for those who are in college. And as you sit there today, you may be wondering, I'm 62 now. When I wrote the book, I was 60. Why would a 61-year-old man write a book on the hookup culture? And the main reason is because I have three teenagers. And so in one sense, I wrote it for them. They've all three have read it. We discussed it. I'm going to have my daughter read it again before she leaves for college next year. But when it gets right down to it, I really wrote it for that generation and the parents of people in that generation. And if you look at how it really came about, there were three events, you might say, that took place that really led me to finally write the book. The first happened 3 years ago. I was at a dinner. There was a speaker. It was a group of men, and this speaker came in. He was talking about relationships. And he was a really unusual man. He is an Episcopal priest. He lives in New York City. And he's very gifted. One of the things he does on the side is he teaches or coaches rugby. And he coaches the rugby team for Columbia University. And in this speech, he made this comment. He said, you know, I really love these young men. He tries to minister to them, reach out to them. He says, but listen to these college students, these young men, talk about their sex lives. He said, you would think they were describing a double X-rated movie. And then he said this. He said, I fear that if something doesn't change, we're going to lose this next generation of young people. Now, I don't know what he meant by lose them, but it really got my attention because I have three children in that generation. The second thing that happened is my daughter went to a camp. This was a couple of summers ago, and I had an opportunity to meet her counselor. A lovely young lady who was a senior, going to be an upcoming senior at a major university. And she had probably a cabin of maybe 10, 15-year-old girls. And they had a number of conversations, and as you can imagine, they somehow got into a discussion about sex. And I really appreciated what this young lady had to say, but I was floored when my daughter, when she returned home, told me, she said, you know, it's interesting. I learned something from my counselor. She has been involved with what's called a friends with benefits relationship. Now, I don't know if you know that term. In fact, you know, looking back, I was pretty naive before I wrote this book. I didn't know that term. But what that means is that you have a friendship with somebody of the opposite sex, and you treat sex as just kind of another form of recreation. You might go play tennis, you might have a cup of coffee, you go have sex, and then you say goodbye. No relationship, no commitment, no romance. And this counselor, who I did have a chance to meet, told these girls, the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. It's a dead-end street. It leads to nothing but guilt and a sense of real meaninglessness. And then the final thing that happened was I read a book called by a Dr. Donna Freitas called The End of Sex. It was the subtitle of the book that caught my attention. The subtitle was How the Hookup Culture is Leaving a Generation Unhappy, Sexually Unfulfilled, and Confused About Intimacy. And this was a wonderful book, very well researched. She had interviewed over 2,500 students, college students, and sent out numbers of surveys. Spent a long time really studying this issue, researching it. And when I finished reading the book, I can tell you, I had a really heavy heart for young people today. And that's when I said, even though I'm no expert on this, I'm going to write on it. And that's how it came about. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the word hookup. Most parents aren't. But a hookup is simply when two people accept and participate in a casual sexual encounter. And they have no real relationship necessarily. There's no romance. There's no real relationship necessarily. And it's become a real reality on our college campuses today. And what Freitas says is she calls it the accepted norm. She says you have to be hardened about sex and you have to forget about romance if you're going to be involved. And she says the most frequent complaint that she heard from particularly young women was how the dating culture has kind of died. That young men and young women don't get together just to get to know one another. Maybe go out to eat, go to a movie. But that has really kind of died on college campuses particularly. I think it's kind of died in high school as well. And one of the things that she recognizes, the hookup culture primarily influences those students who want to have an active social life, particularly in the Greek system. Now, you may be wondering, how did this come about? Now, when I was in college, I graduated in 1976. In college, there's always been sexual promiscuity. But something has clearly changed. And people wonder, well, what's happened? What's caused this to come about, this change? Well, in the book, I outline four major reasons. And the first is maybe the biggest, in my opinion. And that's the issue of pornography. Pornography is a huge problem in the lives of our young people today. See, when I was in college, or when I was a teenager, if you wanted to go to see anything pornographic, you had to go to a seedy area of town to watch it. But that's all changed. Your children have access to it on their smartphone. And I guarantee you, if you have teenagers and they have a smartphone or access to a computer, my guess is that they probably have viewed pornography. And the problem is it changes the attitudes, particularly of young men, of the role women should play in a sexual relationship. It really impacts the way they view the opposite sex. And this is the problem. You have easy access to it 24 hours a day, and it's so easy to hide from everybody. It's something you can do in secret. And it's caused a major, major problem because it's so highly addictive. In fact, I had a counselor tell me it's the 500-pound gorilla of all the addictions that are out there. Now, second reason, this is not surprising, and this has always been present is in colleges, and that is the use of alcohol. Now, it's not so much that students are drinking. It's how much they're drinking, how often they're drinking. I had lunch with a dad last Monday, a week ago. Got three boys in college. He says it's amazing. He named the college, which I won't name. He says it's amazing how they have parties every night, and they drink every night. And it's not surprising if you go out and you have too much to drink that you end up doing something you normally would not do if you were sober. And then there's the peer pressure. And the peer pressure really is a problem for freshmen. Because they're told if you really want to be accepted, if you want to have a really exciting, active social life, you got to participate in this. Because if you don't, you're probably going to be rejected. As a student at Princeton put it, those who do not adhere to, and particularly those who publicly question the tenets or practices of the hookup culture, are thus considered unaccepted, unwelcome, or abnormal. And I think everybody here knows the power of peer pressure. But I think the final reason, maybe the main reason, I don't know. But that's just how our society and how we determine what is moral and immoral, how that has all changed. You see, if you go back in our country's history, there was a predominant view of morality, the Judeo-Christian view. And basically, in that view, we had an objective moral order that God had designed and given to us, dispensed to us, His people. And we are called to submit our lives to it. Because when we do, that's when our lives will really flourish. It impacts your ultimate well-being. But that's all changed. There's a new view, a more modern view on morality. And it's much more subjective. The modern view contends that moral truth comes from within the heart. It's something you have to figure out for yourself. You follow your desires. You follow your passions. You come up with your own moral standards. And that's what's happened. That's what you see on colleges today. You know, the real problem with this view, it really makes no demands on a person's life as far as what they do sexually. And it's really, if you think about it, it's also a theological statement. And that what it's saying is that God doesn't really care how I channel my lusts and my desires and my passions. I've got to find out what's right for me. And that's why we're called to be tolerant. I should accept what you think is moral or what you think is moral. Well, because we each have to come up with our own moral standard. And I think that's that all four of those come together to create this hookup culture. And so the question, though, that I think people are asking, you might be sitting here wondering yourself, particularly as you think about your children or your grandchildren, is where is this leading us? Where is this going to ultimately take us as a culture? You know, is it going to have impact on their future relationships, or is this just a non-issue? Well, I'm going to read this. I'm just going to read this. This is right out of the book, because I think this kind of gives you an idea. One of the common responses Dr. Freitas got from the students she interviewed is how sad and unhappy they are about hooking up. They all fear that it will rob them of healthy, fulfilling sexual relationships in the future. In her own words, quote, "At its very worst, hooking up made students feel miserable and abused, and some students claim that all it took was a hookup gone wrong and your college experience could be ruined, that one night could make or break your life at college for good. So many of the students regret the missed opportunities of relationships that could have been." She goes on to say, "On a personal level, most of these same students didn't want to be thought of merely as someone to have sex with after a night of drunken partying or someone to walk away from without a care. Men and women both spoke of how they wanted to be made to feel special, to experience what it was like when someone else wanted to know everything about them. They yearned for someone to make an effort to create a beautiful setting in which such knowing and being known could occur. For someone who would set aside lavish amounts of time for this to take place, that women and men harbor secret wishes for what appears to be the old-fashioned trappings of romance seems symptomatic of hookup culture's failings. What they want is everything that hookup culture leaves out. The hookup is not liberating at all. If what young men and women really want is just to go out on dates and get to know someone." And there's so much more as far as consequences. And by the way, I need to tell you this. My wife said, you know, the first half of this book is depressing. And I'm sharing with y'all the depressing stuff right now, okay? The second part is very uplifting. So there's more to this. But as I said just a minute ago, addiction to pornography is serious. It is really serious. It's, like I said, you easily become addicted to it. You do it in secret so nobody really knows what's going on until later when real serious problems emerge. And it's so difficult to overcome. And it can have devastating impact on your relationships, particularly your sexuality. Pornography, this is out of the book, can easily give a person an easy escape from real life and all of its pain, but it creates all types of problems, many of which evolve slowly so that you never really see them coming until they're quite serious. The most alarming consequence that it causes sexual desire and functioning difficulties, and it often shapes one's sexual interests in a destructive way. I shared this message back in the spring with a group about this size. And afterwards, a woman came up and shared this with me. She says, "We have some friends. Their daughter got married recently. And it was I think they were in their mid-20s, a lovely young girl and young man. Both of them were virgins when they got married. But she said, sadly, on their honeymoon night, the husband could not perform sexually because he had to come forth and admit that he had been addicted to pornography for 2 years. And he believed and hoped that getting married would release him from that." Now, I don't know the end of their story. I haven't heard anything more. But what a sad thing to happen. As you begin a life together on your honeymoon, to be robbed what God desires for you, all because of pornography. This is a huge, huge problem. And what I'm seeing, and I had a chance to share this at a college fraternity, but what you're seeing for so many young men particularly is that they are graduating from college with a double, what I call a double addiction. They're addicted to alcohol and they're addicted to pornography. And what they don't realize is that they have dug themselves a deep, deep hole that's hard to get out of, particularly as they get out of school, begin a career, get married, and have children. And so what I would just say to you, if you have a young person in your life that this applies to, if you can just get them to read the parts of the book about pornography, it will scare them to death. It will give them a healthy fear. This is something that I have really emphasized with my children. And they're scared to death of it. The problem is, most parents never even talk to their kids about pornography. And maybe it's because they're just not aware of how pervasive it is. But it's a huge issue. I'm not going to talk too much about sexually transmitted diseases, other than just to say this. It's like 40% of college students who participate in hookup culture have contracted some type of sexually transmitted disease. Some of them there's no cure for. But this just tells you something. When I was in college, there were 2 sexually transmitted diseases. Today, there's 25. And like I said, some of them there's no cure for. You have it for life. Now, in the second half of the book, as I said, it's a little more uplifting. I start by talking about, and let me just say this, chapter 5 is very interesting in the book. In it, I lay out, and you can skip it if you want, but it's pretty interesting stuff. I lay out all the evidence that backs up everything that I'm saying. And it's very compelling. But unfortunately, our modern culture doesn't seem to be really interested in what the social sciences are coming up with. But in the second half of the book, I start by talking about about our ideas about life and how our ideas about life are formed. And ideas are so important because they determine how we see the world and the decisions we make, the choices we make, our priorities. The problem is, philosophy will tell you that your ideas about life can be true or they can be false. In fact, Jesus talks about this in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, when he talks about the eye is the lamp of the body, If you've ever read that, for years I never had a clue what he was talking about. But the eye, and he says, if your eye is rooted in the light, you'll be able to see clearly. But if your eye is dark, you will walk in darkness, and you will stumble, and you will harm yourself. But as some scholar shared with me, that word eye literally means your perception of reality. It has to do with the lens through which you see life. And it can either be rooted in what is true or what is false. The brilliant mathematician philosopher Blaise Pascal says, the number one reason people struggle with life is because they have false ideas about reality. And he says, you need to be able to seek to gain wisdom and uproot false beliefs and replace them with the truth. And this is what I found to be true in counseling situations. It's so often when I meet with a man whose life, I just met with a guy Friday, his life is a mess. And he can't figure out why. And one of the main reasons is because so many of the things that he has believed as an adult are false. This is what concerns me the most when you have false beliefs about reality, is that they're destructive because we're often not aware of what we believe is wrong until we get burned by the belief. Now, I share this because this is all true, particularly as it relates to sexual intimacy. And I think that's the problem. We have false ideas about what sex is for. Our young people think it's just something you do for pleasure. Something you do for recreation. You just treat each other like objects. But that's a false belief. There's a guy by the name of George Leonard. He was some of you may remember him. He was a very well-known American author, wrote 15 books. He at one time was editor of Look magazine. He died back in 2010. And for a number of years, he was a big proponent of sexual liberation, the sexual liberation movement. He believed you should have as many sexual partners as you want. And he would have really been a real advocate of the hookup culture. But towards the end of his life, he wrote a book that stunned people. And the title of the book was The End of Sex, Erotic Love After the Sexual Revolution. And he said this, I quote, he said, I have finally come to see that every game has a rule and sex has rules. This guy's not a Christian at all. Unless you play by the rules, you'll find that sex can create a depth of loneliness that nothing else can. And it strikes me that if Leonard is correct, that sex has rules and that ignoring them can lead to painful consequences, it's only natural for us to ask is, what are the rules and who makes them? And this is where it starts clearly with God. I mean, you think about it. Sex was his idea. I mean, to be honest, think about this. God could have given us our sexuality for one reason, and that was just for procreation. You have sexual relations only to get pregnant. But that's not what he did. He made it that it was very, not only pleasurable, but very meaningful. That was the intent. And it seems logical, if sexual intimacy was his idea, he must have the blueprint that leads to the ultimate sexual experience. And so in the 7th chapter of the book, and I'll just tell you this, it's the best chapter. And you can use it. I know parents who have used it with 12 and 13 year old children. It's great for if you want to, it's really sex education. But when you read it, it's very meaningful. And a young person, when they read it, they respond, that's what I want. That's what I'm looking for. But see, they don't hear this. I think one of our problems, and I like I mentioned earlier, I'm I've probably been very naive in my life, raising my kids, as far as knowing what's going on out there. Fortunately, my wife is not. She's on top of things, and she talks to our kids. But I think what so easily happens, because this is a difficult thing to talk to our children about. It is. And so we end up just, all we end up doing is telling them, this is what sex is. This is how you get pregnant. You know, a birds and the bees talk. And then if you subscribe to a biblical perspective, you tell them, and don't have sex until you get married. And for some young people, that's all they hear. And then it's never explained to them, what did God intend when He gave us our sexuality? And you start in the Old Testament. By the way, most people, there is so much sex in the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament. And when you read in the Old Testament, usually it says, depending on your translation, it says, a man lays with his wife, or has relations with his wife. The Hebrew word that's used, surprisingly, is the word yada, Y-A-D-A, which in the English means empty, boring conversation. But in Hebrew, it's an active verb. It's an action word that means to know, to be known, and to be deeply respected. And this is what I think every human being longs for. But there's also another word that's used, and it's the Hebrew word that's parallel that's used with yada, and it's the word hesed, H-E-S-E-D, which means deep friendship, loyalty, devotion, and steadfastness. In other words, hesed is faithful love. It is sexual, intimate love with your very best friend. That's the way God designed it. And whenever you see, like when David commits adultery with Bathsheba, the word yada is not used. The word that's used is shakab, which just means sexual intercourse. And then when you go to the New Testament, in Matthew 19, Jesus says that He made us male and female, and that a man shall leave his father and mother, and the King James says, will cleave to his wife. Some translations say join, but the actual word is a Hebrew word cleave, and it's a very significant word. To cleave means absolute union. To cleave to someone is to say, I completely belong to you. Exclusively. Permanently. All of me. And this is what marriage is all about. God made sex for cleaving. He designed sexual intimacy so that one person could say to another person, I belong completely and exclusively and permanently to you. All of me, everything. And so do you see how this hookup culture cheapens sexuality when it's just another form of recreation and pleasure that has no boundaries? I want to read that. This came from Tim Keller. Let me read to you what he says. God is quite clear about this. You should never give someone your body if you have not given them your whole self. Otherwise, you are just an object for someone's pleasure. This is why you marry. Radically giving yourself unconditionally to someone else. Your entire being. He says, when you follow this prescription, your sex life will soar. When we settle for something less than God's blueprint, sex over time becomes routine, boring, and utterly meaningless. And that's what Donna Freitas in her research says is what college students are experiencing. Now, the last thing that I do in the book is I lay out kind of a challenge and maybe a solution, really, And I don't have time to go through it, but I'll just share a couple of quick thoughts and then wrap this up. By the way, the book is for sale in the back, along with the other books that I've written. Kim Knott has been nice enough to come, and she works with us to handle all of that. But in the very last chapter, I really focus on the importance of our spiritual lives. Because I don't know if you're familiar with Ernest Becker. He was an atheist. He wrote a Pulitzer Prize winning book. Many people consider one of the great books written in the last 50 years called The Denial of Death. And in it, he says that God has become irrelevant in so many people's lives, and that modern people do not seem to have any real purpose in life. He says, therefore, what you're seeing happen is people are looking to sex and romance to give them a sense of significance. And what this man is saying is that God has been displaced in our culture by sex and romance. And in the books that I read doing the research, so many of these young people are now on a spiritual search, because they are finding their lives to be so empty and so meaningless. In fact, I remember going to the President's Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C. a number of years ago. Billy Graham was speaking. This was well over 15 years ago. He had just left Harvard. He says, the day before I met with the president of Harvard, Derek Bach, and we talked for an hour. He says, when I finished and was getting up to leave, I asked him one final question. What is the number one struggle that the students of Harvard are having to contend with? And he says, Bach did not have to blink. He said, living empty, meaningless lives. Now, how do our colleges become places of emptiness? Those should be some of the great years of a person's life. And so I really emphasize at the very end the fact that God put us here to live in a relationship with Him. That's the reason for life. That's the reason for our earthly existence. We're told in 1 Corinthians 8:6 that we exist for Him. We think, no, I exist for me. No, it says we exist for Him. And that's why Augustine said, God, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts will not find rest until they rest in thee. Let me conclude by just saying this. If you're a parent or a grandparent, and a lot of parents are asking, what do I do? How do I prepare my child for what they're facing out there in the world? And I usually tell them four things. The first is, seek to give them a vision for their sexuality. What God intended when He gave it to us. That's why chapter 7 is so important. Because if we don't give them a vision, the culture will give it to them. The second thing is something I've already mentioned, and that is, put a healthy fear in them. You know, fear can be a positive thing. You know, the Bible talks a lot about the fear of the Lord. You know, we should have a healthy fear, all of us. A healthy fear of one of the great principles in the Scripture, and that is when Paul says, don't be deceived, God will not be mocked. Whatever a man sows, this he shall also reap. We should have a real healthy fear of God's laws of sowing and reaping. Third, cultivating their spiritual life. And that's the beauty of having a great church, a church family. Well, St. Luke's is plays such a crucial role, I think, in so many family lives. But that's crucial. And then finally, and maybe the hardest thing that we have to do, and that is to talk to them openly about this. And I find that's the hardest thing for parents to do. But after a while, what happens, you'll see that it's the discomfort goes away. It becomes kind of normal to be able to talk to your children about these issues. But I can just say this, my great concern really is, after having written the book, it's been out about 8 months, is what I've seen is how so many parents don't seem to think this is a huge issue. And it is. It's a major issue. In fact, as Andy Stanley says, he thinks it's the main reason we have so many problems in our land, is the misuse of our sexuality.